The Human Factor, written by Graham Greene and read by Tim Pigott Smith.
I only know that he who forms a tie is lost. The germ of corruption has entered into his soul. Joseph Conrad. Part 1. Chapter 1. Castle, ever since he had joined the firm as a young recruit more than 30 years ago, had taken his lunch in a public house behind St. James's Street, not far from the office. If he had been asked why he lunched there, he would have referred to the excellent quality of the sausages. He might have preferred a different bitter from Watney's, but the quality of the sausages outweighed that. He was always prepared to account for his actions, even the most innocent, and he was always strictly on time. So, by the stroke of one, he was ready to leave. Arthur Davis, his assistant, with whom he shared a room, departed for lunch punctually at 12 and returned, but often only in theory, 1 hour later. It was understood that in case of an urgent telegram, Davis or himself must always be there to receive the decoding. But they both knew well that in the particular subdivision of their department nothing was ever really urgent. The difference in time between England and the various parts of Eastern and Southern Africa, with which the two of them were concerned, was usually large enough, even when, in the case of Johannesburg, it was little more than an hour, for no one outside the department to worry about the delay in the delivery of a message. The fate of the world, Davis used to declare, would never be decided on their continent. However many embassies China or Russia might open from Addis Ababa to Conakry, or however many Cubans landed. Castle wrote a memorandum for Davis. If Zaire replies to number 172, send copies to Treasury and FO. He looked at his watch. Davis was 10 minutes late. Castle began to pack his briefcase. He put in a note of what he had to buy for his wife at the cheese shop in Jermyn Street, and of a present for his son, to whom he had been disagreeable that morning, 2 packets of Maltesers, and a book, Clarissa Harlowe, in which he had never read further than chapter 79 of the first volume. Directly he heard a lift door close and Davis's step in the passage, he left his room. His lunchtime with the sausages had been cut by 11 minutes. Unlike Davis, he always punctually returned. It was one of the virtues of age. Arthur Davis, in the staid office, was conspicuous by his eccentricities. He could be seen now, approaching from the other end of the long white corridor, dressed as if he had just come from a rather horsey country weekend, or perhaps from the public enclosure of a racecourse. He wore a tweed sports jacket of a greenish overall colour, and he displayed a scarlet spotted handkerchief in the breast pocket. He might have been attached in some way to a tote, but he was like an actor who has been miscast. When he tried to live up to the costume, he usually fumbled the part. If he looked in London, as though he had arrived from the country, in the country when he visited Castle, he was unmistakably a tourist from the city. "Sharp on time as usual," Davis said with his habitual guilty grin. "My watch is always a little fast," Castle said, apologising for the criticism which he had not expressed. "An anxiety complex, I suppose." "Smuggling out top secrets as usual?" Davis asked, making a playful pretense at seizing Castle's briefcase. His breath had a sweet smell. He was addicted to port. "Oh, I've left all those behind for you to sell. You'll get a better price from your shady contacts." "Kind of you, I'm sure. And then, you're a bachelor. You need more money than a married man. I halve the cost of living." "Ah, but those awful leftovers," Davis said. "The joint we made into shepherd's pie, the dubious meatball. Is it worth it? The married man can't even afford a good port." He went into the room they shared and rang for Cynthia. Davis had been trying to make Cynthia for 2 years now, but the daughter of a major general was after bigger game. All the same, Davis continued to hope. It was always safer, he explained, to have an affair inside the department. It couldn't be regarded as a security risk.